This is a pre-recorded version of the WTKA Roundtable on WTKA, unsurprisingly, 9 o'clock Thursdays. It is pre-recorded, however, so if you call in, no one will answer.
Insider Sports Talk 1050 WTKA online at WTKA.com. Sam Webb, Mr. Ira Weintraub, and then of course 9 o'clock every Thursday, MGO Blog Roundtable time. As normally, the three-man MGO Blog Roundtable crew joins me today. Two-thirds of that party, led of course by the man that started it all at MGO Blog, Brian Cook. BC, how are you this morning?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing all right. And Seth Fisher, who we just had Seth on. So Seth is back. Seth, how are you this morning?
Brian, your tan is way too good for someone who's supposed to be working on Hail the Victors right now.
Well, you know.
He could be like out back. He could be riding out on his patio or something, right, Brian?
It's the glare of your screen from working on that quarterback's preview.
Sam, be careful saying out back together because you might bring the women, images of women running around naked in a bar smashing stuff.
Right. Only in Florida, right? Only in Florida. All right. We needed a little levity to start as we get into a very heavy topic on this show, on the roundtable, frankly, as we've discussed this topic before. But it's, you know, I feel like this is going to be par for the course, if you will, in the coming weeks, months, or years, however long it takes for the mediation process to go on, as Matthew Schembechler and two former players are going to go public today in a press conference to lend voice to the allegations that they made in the they were three of the 800 people who have spoken out prior to this anonymously against Bo Schembechler and about his knowledge of the transgressions, the criminal behavior of then Dr. Robert Anderson. And so parsing this, and you raised a very, very valid point, Seth, that this changes the timeline. It moves it back at least, what, about 10 years? Is that right, Seth? If we're talking,
yeah, because before my understanding, I'm anxious to see what Matt says at 1 o'clock when he gives his when he does his press conference today, because our understanding before was that Anderson was working for the university and they moved him over to the athletic department, and then that would have been in the late 70s, right? And then after that, it becomes an athletic department problem because somebody discovered him at Michigan.
Right, so this is making Bo Schembechler aware of a Robert Anderson issue before he was even
in his first year of coaching. Yeah. In his first year of coaching, which would have been, I'm anxious to see what Matt says. I don't know if that, you know, I don't think that he was one of the people who talked to Wilmer Hale, right?
Right.
These are all
right.
People who spoke to Wilmer Hale. And they didn't include anything that he said, that he's saying now, in the report. So I'd also like to know kind of why that was left out and why the timeline of the report doesn't line up with what Matt says. The other guys, I think that they lend credence to something that I think we already knew when we looked at the report, which is that several people told Bo over the course of the 70s and in the certainly in the 80s, right? Several people told Bo that something was going on not right with Anderson, and whether he misunderstood it or whether he, whatever he, however he took it, he didn't do something about it and had the opportunity to. And I keep going back to this. It's, you know, all these people are dead. Bo's dead, Canham's dead, Anderson's dead. The victims are still alive. And the university should be doing what it can to address the, you know, the fact that these people were victimized at University of Michigan because of people that Michigan put in power.
So, and that kind of gets to maybe the meat of what I want to get to today, Brian. So when we say, when I say, I'll look myself in, I said earlier this morning, you know, my belief, not a belief that I expect others to have, is that I believe that Bo Schembechler was made aware, as were many people in the university environment at that time. And I think he didn't take it seriously. I think he minimized it. This is part of getting ready for football. That's what I think happened. And so that makes you culpable as an institution. And so you go about the process of achieving some semblance of making people whole, some semblance of restitution, understanding that you're never going to make people totally whole. But what does that look like? I mean, like you just said, you know, you have to react and you have to acknowledge the victim. So what does that look like beyond the mediation that they're doing right now? The process they're a part of right now, Brian?
I really don't know. I mean, this is something that, you know, there's been a lot of thought about what to do in these kind of situations. And so I would defer to people who actually know what they're talking about instead of sports bloggers. This is really not something that I have. It's not something that I'm well versed in, I guess. What does a real apology look like? I mean, you acknowledge the harm, you put in procedures to make sure it never happens again. I mean, I think that's the most meaningful thing going forward, because this is a university that has ongoing issues with sexual assault with many professors. So there needs to be sort of a comprehensive look at how this reporting goes and how these people manage to skate along for years doing things that should not be done. I mean, there's the second guy, second command of the university who got fired. There's Bruce Conforth. There's a guy in the computer science department. Like, there's a whole lot of reckoning going on about sexual misconduct for people who aren't dead, who are currently, or at least until recently, are currently active in this kind of thing. So I think this is just, I mean, it's bigger than any one incident or any one person. You know, you have to have a university where these kind of things, when they happen, are, you can report them and actually have restitution in a short order and consequences in short order, instead of years and years and years of ongoing trauma.
Is that what we're looking at, Seth, you think, as far as addressing this? Are we looking at years and years and years moving forward? I mean, I don't know what this looks like either. And I, you know, this is not me asking you to diagnose what the experts, you know, would say should be done. We are all reacting to this just like everyone who reads the blog or who listens to the show. So as you see it, as you look at it, how does it strike you? How does it hit you is really what I'm interested in. And how long do you think this process is? Because I think that this is just the beginning. Talking to lawyers about this, they anticipated billboards, commercials, press conferences. They anticipated that being the case. And if this is a process that goes years and years and years, then we're going to see any number of these in that time.
I mean, I have to be honest first that I'm a fan, right? And I'm coming at this from my biases that I'm a Michigan fan. I want Michigan to be something that I am happy, you know, that I'm comfortable representing. But I'm also, you know, I have to come through my biases all the time, especially because I've done so much history. You know, I've got a big wall between me and information of just my own, the way my eyes are colored. So for me, it's just been a struggle to kind of get past that, to try to put all that aside and look at what's in the report and treat that as, and listen to what the victims say and make sure that I'm not representing the university as, you know, I'm not their attorney, right? I'm just a fan. And like Brian says, like, bloggers, what we think about, like, the whole process, that's way beyond us. That's not what we're focused on, right? That's not what we know things about. I can only speak the same way that any other fan can, which is, like,
right, exactly.
You know, how it affects me personally a little bit that, like, Bo, you know, was not a great man, but I never thought Bo was a great man. I know that my mom hated Bo when she was on campus in the early 70s because she was involved in the anti-war movement, and Bo was considered kind of one of the people that they, you know, didn't agree with at the time. I always just, as far as, you know, the university dealing with this, it should take a long time. You know, the only example we really have is Penn State, right? And how they have been dealing with that, and they created a fund, and they created classes that continue to teach us to make themselves the opposite. Right now, they're part of the solution, and I think that, you know, there's still probably a lot more to go. But I think ultimately, what I would be comfortable with as a fan is Michigan making themselves at the front of the line to be part of the solution for this. And like Brian says, not just with their not just with Anderson, right, but with sexual harassment and people who take advantage of these systems, right, to take advantage of people. That's what I would be happy with.
Is there any sign that you guys have been able to uncover of, you know, obfuscation, denial, shirking of responsibility from an institutional standpoint? Have you seen any evidence of that so far?
I don't think so. You know, the immediate reaction was to have this report written, and the report doesn't pull any punches. And now we're in the lawsuit phase. And so the people who are going to have this press conference are going to be, I think, unsparing in their criticism. and so there's going to be another period of extremely negative press that they're going to have to deal with. And they're going to have to, like, find a way to provide restitution, whatever that looks like, and that's going to be money. And I don't know if there's anything else the university can really do. Mm-hmm. I mean, they can provide a counselor, and maybe that helps, but I'd imagine that, I mean, the insidious thing about all this is once it happens, it's just there, and it's just a part of you, and there's no going back. And that's why it's really important for university not to just look at the fact that this happened with people who are now dead. Mm-hmm. And it's important for them to, like, look at how the reporting failed, how the seriousness of the allegations were not, the allegations weren't taken seriously, and how that didn't stop when Robert Anderson retired, and how that has gone on to the point where the provost who got fired had things in his personnel report for years that did not trigger anything until very recently. And that can't continue.
Agreed. I think that as we move, I'll try to make a rough segue here. I guess to me, if you are living up to or trying to live up to a moral standard, you are not letting this get to legislative intervention, you know, like, which is what I know we just talked to Dan Murphy about. There was a play in the Nassar case, right, to remove the statute of limitations. It shouldn't even have to get to that point. If you are accepting responsibility, which it seems that Michigan is, I say seems because I'm not, you know, sitting, I'm not privy to the back and forth as part of this mediation, but that they're at the table, that they can convene this, you know, they commission this report suggests that, hey, you know what, we are culpable here, and we're going to do, to the extent that we can, we're going to do what we can to make it right. Now we'll have to see if that actually comes to fruition in the coming years, which is what I think it'll be. And then we'll make our assessment accordingly. So, but yeah, anything that I hear now, I just is not going to change. Like, it's not going to make me believe any more than I already do that the powers that be were told, whether you're talking about Bo Schembechler or Don Canham or, you know, admin at the university, and they didn't take these allegations seriously. That is my belief.
I'd like to add quickly that I don't think it helps that Michigan's head football coach is saying that's not the Bo Schembechler I knew. I mean, I understand that he had a long time to come up with his response, and I don't want to, like, excoriate him. I don't think it was the worst possible response, but it was it lacked an acknowledgement of the report, and that was disappointing to hear.
Gotcha. All right. So as we, again, rough segue, shift into other big news yesterday, more national in scope, and that these meetings, in Washington about NIL, as the NCAA is clamoring for, as I said to Dan Murphy, federal intervention here. Please come save us from these states that have dared to come up with some NIL rules on their own. And these states are going to start having student athletes with endorsement agreements July 1st. And that's going to, it's going to make things so unfair to these other places that don't have NIL rules. We need you to come in and get it done. Is there any belief on either of your parts that the government is going to put something in place in a matter of, say, 3 weeks?
No.
No,
they are not. I think that there is a good argument that there should be something at the federal level, so you don't have this patchwork of 50 different state legislators all trying to one-up each other. At least the ones in the South are going to be trying to one-up each other.
Yeah, Alabama's was a little hastily written to make sure that they were there on July 1st, right?
Yeah.
Like some state legislatures are looking more at the linebacker level than they are at the fairness level.
So, yeah, I think there should be something federal, but I think it shouldn't, like, the what the NCAA wants should be of no consideration whatsoever. Like, just put them in a box, and then once you're done with the legislation, you take them out of the box and you hand it to them and you walk away. Because they're clearly just arguing for their own financial self-interest, and I don't care about the NCAA's financial self-interest. I mean, it's ridiculous. So there's no prospect that there's not going to be at least a brief period where it's kind of the Wild West. And then at some point, you're probably going to get a bill to like have something real going forward.
So is there any sense, and maybe you know this, Seth, of the timeline for a law here in Michigan? I know there was legislation proposed at one point.
Michigan's got legislation. It's just been kind of working its way through slowly, but it was going to be in 2022 is when they were targeting. Yeah. So what the legislators were doing before some of these southern schools jumped in and said, "Oh no, we better get on this because Henry To'o is out there." If you read Ohio State boards right now, they're drawing a direct connection between like how fast that law was passed and how that recruitment went down, which is probably true. But like Michigan and California and some other states were kind of looking at this in the standpoint of saying, look, we're going to force your hand, but we're going to give you a timeline. So they were all going to make it by the 2022 season, which would give the NCAA time to come up with their own thing and give the federal government time to put together something. Now, there are several bills that have been being worked on at the federal level. There's one that the NCAA wrote and, you know, just gave to their buddy Ted Cruz to say, like, here, please say, you know, come on, do a little corruption for us. Come on. I don't think that thing's going anywhere for him. And then there's another one that the Congressional Black Caucus has been putting together for a while, and they're the ones who seem to be talking to the most serious people. And if as far as like, you know, legislation that we'd like to see that puts the NCAA in a box and just, okay, we'll hear your opinion and that's about it, and then we're going to write something that makes sense, that protects the rights of people to, you know, conduct commerce in the United States is really what they're focusing on, right? Mm-hmm. That is still going to take a while. I don't understand the real sticking points. I know the NCAA's sticking point is they don't want people to be able to, like, you know, give you $100,000 to sign, and you know, uh-huh, then you can be my car spokesman, that kind of thing. I know Murphy talked about that on the show with you earlier. Like, that's
one of the amazing things about this is this one of the few things in America right now where you can find bipartisan support. Right, you can't find bipartisan support on infrastructure, but you can find it on NIL. Right, and it's but you have some Democrats saying, hey, you know what, let's not just stop at name, image, likeness. Like Cory Booker, who's a former college athlete, is saying, hey, revenue sharing and medical liability and medical insurance and coverage and the length of time that you cover student athletes. So wanting to put more into this makes me think that this is going to get done. I just don't think it's going to get it done anytime soon. So in the interim, how much more of a disadvantage are schools like Michigan going to be at? Because think about this. I mean, there was already a disadvantage when you were just dealing with schools that were cheating. Now they're going to have NIL plus cheating. Which, I mean, it just feels like it's a recipe to exacerbate the gap.
What's changed, really? I mean, Alabama, okay, now Alabama's giving money to players as they weren't before? Like, come on. Right? And, like, is Michigan going to change how we've done things? Like, no. Like, it's going to put things above board, and it might change the economics a little bit. I don't think it's really going to change things except for, like, the most high-profile recruitments, and we weren't really winning a whole lot of five stars anyway. You know, if Walter Nolan's going to make his decision based off of, you know, who's going to have the biggest NIL signing bonus, like, we weren't winning that recruitment anyway.
Well, listen, if you're Michigan, you better be doing an NIL presentation, though.
Oh, of course. Of course. But, I mean, it's going to be fact. And it's going to be fact in the state of Michigan. Michigan was actually one of the ones ahead. But they were the ones writing their legislation to force the NCAA and Congress's hands, because no one wants this to be a patchwork. It's only coming to that way because this has been over 120 years college football has been running the same scam. And you can go back and look at, like, early Yost teams in 1901 and have guy, or 1893, before Yost, we have examples of Michigan players playing recruits from Chicago and keeping it under wraps, and the NCAA kind of didn't even exist at that time. The conferences and the schools were trying to stop the players from getting paid, but it was the same parties, the same scams, the same things that they were doing back then. So they
Michigan was like the Bama of the 1900s.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah, dude, Yost was they hated Yost. Yost was like the Yost affair was like the, I don't want to lionize that man right now, but like, come on. Like, this has been going on. It's been going on for ages and ages and ages, and they've been cutting it along, and that's the only operation they know, their grandfathers know. It's the only way the NCAA's ever learned how to deal with this is just deal with the situation as it comes. And they won a landmark case in the 1950s, and that has been what they've been basing the whole thing on ever since then.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see if what Dan said, because I hadn't heard this until he brought it up. He said that the NCAA will come up with, at least they're talking about coming up with, some legislation that will apply to the states that don't have NIL laws until there is some sort of federal umbrella that everyone can fall underneath. So you wouldn't have as big, because to me, you said, well, the gap's already, they're already paying players. Yeah, they are. They'll be able to pay them more. I mean, they'll have endorsements plus illegal inducements, man. You know, and they'll appeal to the people whose sensibilities are offended by under the table payments. Those people might be even more prone to say, "Oh, well, yeah. You mean I could go? This makes Bama even more enticing to me if I can go there and get paid legitimately." It just seems like,
who are we beating Alabama for? What recruits out there are like, do I really want to go to Michigan or Alabama right now? Like, come on.
Well, the last one that I can think of, it's been a while, was Rashawn Gary.
Okay.
He's the biggest example that comes to mind for me. So it's happened. Is it rare? Sure, it's rare. But
Michigan's going to win recruitments where the player cares about his degree at the end of the day, right? If he's looking at the end and saying, like, am I going to get a Michigan degree or an Alabama degree? That's those are the kinds of guys that we've always recruited to, and I think that Michigan will always have an advantage for. I think the NCAA is not responding to Michigan's needs at all. I think that NCAA is responding to Ohio State's needs, because they're not going to have their NIL, and Alabama will, and that's a problem.
Point taken, and well made. We should see this whole thing is part of another big ticket issues being discussed at a national level right now. We'll take a break here, and you guys ponder during the break, playoff expansion. Proposal came through, sort of reviewing the 14 playoff and proposing an idea for playoff expansion. 8 teams, 12 teams. Do you guys think that that is on the horizon and is the right thing to do, the right way to go? We will address that question on the other side here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTK, The Ticket.
And we are clear on the radio.
Yeah, man. Give me playoff expansion, damn it.
Yeah.
Give it to me. You want hope for guys not opting, more guys not opting out of the season, you better expand the playoffs.
Yeah.
I think last year, what we just saw with guys not really being significantly harmed by opting out, I think you're going to see guys not opt out of playing an entire season, but I think you're going to see them opt out of playing the end of seasons with like, hey, we're out of the playoff hunt, or we're out of the race for the league championship. Boom, I'm sitting out the rest of the way. I think we're going to start seeing that.
Dude, I know specific examples at Michigan and not at Michigan of players who, you know, got injured at the end of the year when they were out of competition. It's not something that's new either. But yeah, man, like the players are more aware now than they were in the past that it's a scam. And if they're getting if they get to be compensated, and they feel like they're being compensated fairly, you know, they're going to go to work like anybody else goes to work. But if you feel like, you know, okay, I needed these guys to get myself to the NFL draft. Now I'm there. What do I need them for? What am I doing this for? You're doing it for your teammates. I think that's the extent of it.
Yeah, and I don't want to dismiss that element too. You will have that. Like Jake Butt is a perfect example. And we just had him on. He was like, dude, probably wasn't the best thing for my career, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
To have played in that game. But I was going to not leave my teammates. And if I had to do it over again, I would do the same thing. So, you know, you do have that element out there. You're going to continue to. I'm not critical of either. Neither was Jake, too, for those of you who are on the stream. He wasn't like anyone who opts out is bad. He just said that was his personal choice.
I think that one thing I like about NIL finally coming through is that fans are going to have the opportunity to show our love for players that don't necessarily get love based off. The only way they get compensated is the NFL, you know, and how long their NFL careers go. But a guy like Denard Robinson, like, how do you show appreciation to that guy? Or Devin Gardner, who stuck at Michigan despite coaching changes and getting benched. Mm-hmm. And, like, you know, fans love that guy. And we want to show that guy respect. I mean, Chase Winovich, like playing for his team when other guys sat down. Like, we love that guy. The fans of college teams have relationships with their players that we have no way to express financially to them. And I think that that's going to be one of the major, major differences in the NIL era, that those kinds of players that we love, you know, maybe fullbacks will come back. Just because fans love fullbacks, we'll bring back fullbacks.
Yeah, man. Fellas, before we went to the break, playoff expansion. The playoff committee, they presented to, all of the ADs, the power brokers in college football right now, and the discussion was about playoff expansion. I don't know why this is a discussion. I don't know why this is a debate. I don't know why they aren't like, yes, let's do this as soon as we possibly can. What's the holdup to this? Can you guys kind of give me the counter to why wouldn't we do this?
Well, if you're Ohio State, things are pretty good right now.
I mean, I don't think people are interested in seeing the same four teams in a four-team playoff every year. I'm not interested. You know, it's a situation where there will be more money for everybody, and so they're going to take the money. Like, and the talking about it now, I guess, is just getting people on board. But it's just a song and dance, and there's going to be
and that's what I don't get. It's like, dude, money, like more money, and you have this issue which we talked about in the break. You look, the NFL draft this year was revelatory. It told athletes that opted out that there's not a penalty for that. Sure, you're going to have some coaches that say you aren't a team guy. You're going to have some fans that come down on you for that, but you care about your bottom line. Your draft position isn't cratering because you opt out. So I think we're going to see more guys opt out, and the difference being not just bowl games. Opting out of end of seasons once it looks like maybe any postseason prospects are done for. So to me, one of the solutions to that is broader postseason prospects, right? Allow for more teams to be in playoff contention. You'll keep more players playing, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, that's absolutely right. That and when name and image comes, that'll also be a because you're going to have contracts with people that specify that you're going to be playing in the games, right?
Right, exactly.
So, you know, at some point, it's good for the health of the game to make these changes. And it'll be interesting for fans of teams who lose a game early in the season and who aren't Alabama. So, so they get a freebie, but a lot of other teams don't. It'll be interesting for the Pac-12. Pac-12 will be like, oh, we can do this now. We can be in it. It'll be interesting for Central Florida and Group of Five teams because they'll get a guaranteed spot. It'll be interesting for viewers who are probably going to get to see Southern teams at some point go up north in the dead of winter.
Yes.
Because you can't go to 12. You can't go to 12 without having home games. You can't have bowl games for all of those. So
I'm sure they're going to try. Oh, man, I'm sure they're going to want to. And if they come north, they're going to want to go to Ford Field or Indianapolis. Like, I know that they don't want to play in the winter. That's like, as much as we're like rubbing our hands for it, I know that like that's going to be one of the main things that they're trying to avoid, especially because you can't advertise at Michigan Stadium.
Well, let's not get ahead of ourselves with envisioning a home game at Michigan Stadium.
We can dream, Brian. We can dream, man. It's about scenarios, right?
Yeah. And
look, I just have them come up here. I would love for it to be in the elements, of course, but I'll take home field. I'll take a home field crowd. You know, give it to me. So,
well, yeah, and so then you avoid that sort of antiseptic corporate feel that a lot of these games have right now. Like they're a Super Bowl type environment where you have like a couple of thousand students that Taco Bell is sponsoring, and then it's the atmosphere is not anything like what a college football game is or should be. And I think that is one of the things that still draws me into the sport is, you know, I've been to games in a lot of places, and the feel of a college football stadium is much different than a NFL one. And I think having that part be part of the playoff would be a good thing.
I mean, I absolutely agree with you. I don't have any faith whatsoever that the people making this decision think that way at all. I mean, they have consistently showed that they want that antiseptic feel. They want to be the NFL and that they want to, you know, take away all this. They don't want the pageantry and tradition because to them, that just is synonymous with blocks in making money, right? They think that everything college is just it goes back to this, like, you know, this purity and the, you know, they don't want that. They'll love the home fans and whatnot, but I don't think that they are thinking that way at all, because the way we're thinking is, God, I would so much rather sit in Michigan Stadium. I'd rather sit in Bloomington than sit in Ford Field. But I don't think that they even understand that that's a consideration.
Well, even on the money front, I mean, the biggest stadiums in this country are college football stadiums, right? So if you want to sell a lot of tickets, then a home game makes a lot of sense. And you could put it at an NFL stadium that seats 50 to 60,000, but you're just throwing money away at that point. And then you got to rent the stadium and you know, it's, you know,
yeah.
I feel like there's a compelling financial reason to do it too. And once you kind of break past this, oh, the bowls are the thing, cause you can get away with that cause it's four. Then I think that that'll crumble gradually and then very fast. Like, I think it'll be surprising, like, how quickly people are like, yeah, let's get away from that.
Yeah, I figure a more substantive discussion at this point is about number, not about should we expand. Yes, freaking yes. Expansion should happen. This is like, let's stop haggling over that, whether it should happen, and start talking about number of teams. I think I've been hearing them talk about 12. That would allow for the top four teams to still have some, I mean, some reward for being the top four teams. They would get buys. So I don't know if you guys have a number in mind. We just got this this message in from one of our listeners, Sherwood 14, who said, why 12 and not 8 or 16? I don't want any teams to have buys. I think for the reason that I just said, you want to preserve your top four teams for another week of the playoffs. I think that's one. And then number two, the reward for being one of the top four teams, you get a bye.
Yeah, also, if you look at how many teams are vying for these spots, so you want to have a balance, I think, between number of teams who seem pretty good and can get in and the number of spots. So if we're talking about eight, then you've got the five Power Five champions, you have top group of five team, and then you have two at larges. And so does that feel good? Because it does it feel good to have three SEC teams in every year? And and you like how much of that, if you're Wisconsin, do you feel like you have access to? Probably not enough. And once you go to 12, you know, then we're talking about like teams like Wisconsin, teams like Oregon, teams like USC, teams like, I was going to say UCLA, but definitely not UCLA. are looking at having a realistic chance of making it. So to me, 8 is not enough. To me, 16 is probably too much because then you've got some filler in there that shouldn't be in there. So 12 seems like the right number to me, just on based on the kind of teams I want to see vying for those spots. And also, I do think that the byes provide another level of tension. And that's, home games also provide another level of tension, right? Because if you finish 5-8 in these rankings, you get a home game. And as a fan, that's going to be something that really matters to me. Oh. So one of the things that we talk about when we talk about expanding the playoff, when people don't want to do it, is they say, well, the regular season is already the playoff. And that, I think that's something that is worth considering, is that, you know, college football historically has had one of the most important, intense regular seasons because of just the nature of the sport. And expanding the playoff would potentially damage that if the playoff hadn't already destroyed the regular season to the point where people are opting out all over the place. So, yeah, to me, 12 is a number. And I would support any kind of expansion, but that seems like the right number.
Seth?
Yeah, I think that people completely overestimate how much the regular season of NCAA football tells us about football teams. You really know way less than you think you do at the end of a year. And it's been proven during, you know, during the playoffs where you've seen, or even when the playoffs were just a two-team playoff with the BCS, we saw teams that were dominant all year who got defeated by some one-loss SEC team, right? Like, you don't actually know how good these teams are. So to look at the end of the season and say, like, these are our best two or best four teams, you've probably been wrong more often than you've been right. I did a study once, just going back as far as my fan memory lasts, so because, like, that would allow me to, you know, make decisions based off of how good I knew teams were. And it looked like 6 was kind of the right number as far as, like, teams at the end of the season who have a legitimate claim to be a national champion contender, right? If they come through a playoff at the end, and then you have probably 12 to 18 teams that would have a case if they won a couple more big games, especially, like, you know, sometimes you have a Tulane or something that would come through. So 12 seems like a fairly good number. It's kind of right in the middle of that space between here's the number of teams that really made a case to be in a national championship game already, and here are the teams that might have a case if they knocked off some big time names, and go from there. Again, I don't trust the incentives that they're putting together, but, like, at least they're getting rid of this horror. 4 has been a terrible system. 4 has just been, it ruined the bowl games. It created a system where 3 teams have a, you know, an invitation at the beginning of the year already. And college football fandom is just waiting for one of those teams to slip up, and they get to go anyway, right?
Yeah, we're going to blow our roundtable here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA. We have Brian Cook and Seth Fisher. I'm sure you guys were annoyed like I was when, hey, the Celtics job is open. Let's check out Juwan Howard. The Blazers job is open. Let's check out Juwan Howard. Pacers job, Juwan Howard. He's suddenly a candidate for every NBA opening. And, you know, the most galling, and look, I like Jeff Goodman. I like him personally. But his tweet was, probably is a non-starter. Probably won't work. But they should call Juwan Howard. It's like, you just said, you know, the guy's coaching his sons. He's at his alma mater. He's made $100 million already. In what world does it make sense for Juwan Howard to go to the NBA right now?
Well, it doesn't, but it didn't make any sense for John Beilein to go to the NBA, right? So, like,
yeah, but I think it makes even less sense.
No, he went to Cleveland
for Juwan Howard.
Cleveland doesn't Howard, have Dave Lillard hanging around. I mean, come on, man.
But it, look, I'm not saying it made sense. Look, I was on the air saying that when he was looking at the Pistons as a head coach under the former regime, I said, this is a train wreck. I sincerely believe that to be the case. That was not me being condescending. That was me caring about my guy, John Beilein. He knows this. We've had this discussion. I was like, dude, it's a train wreck situation. I don't think this is a train wreck scenario now, in that you got, I really, really love Trey Weaver, the moves that he's making there. You know, Dwayne Casey is a really good coach. You have a different roster, not middle to aging veterans.
I'm not talking about Beilein taking the Pistons job. I mean, that's completely, that makes total sense, right? But like,
you're talking about leaving for the Cavaliers. But see, he had been to the mountaintop in college, right? Done it for 45 years, always wanted to try the NBA. And this was like his shot to try the NBA. I'm not saying that it made perfect sense or good sense even. I'm saying, but if you compare it to Juwan Howard, who's made a ton of money in his career, right? He's at his alma mater. He's coaching one son. He's gonna coach the other son. What can the NBA offer him at this point that can compete with that?
I don't imagine it's going to happen now. I would not bet against Juwan Howard eventually coaching in the NBA after he's had some, because it's the NBA. If you're in basketball and someone gives you the keys to the Celtics, the Lakers, like, man, like you got to consider that. Like that is the peak outside of money. Right? Like, that is the top echelon sport.
Being a parent, and for the entirety of their lives, he's been a player or a coach, traveling half the time. He's their dad. They know he loves them. He's with them when he can be. But now, when you talk about when he's with them, it's all the time. Like, we're doing this together. And I just, whether it's the Lakers or the Celtics, I don't think there's a scenario or there's money that can top that.
Money's not the issue. No, and I don't think it's going to happen right now. But I think that eventually, you know, Juwan will hopefully win a national championship in Michigan. His boys are going to go through the program. He's going to, you know, put 9 years in college. And if he's still a big name at that point, like, and you're getting kind of close to your retirement or something, like, yeah, man, like, I would not fault him for wanting to go and try to hit the pen. We'll see how good you are. Man, like, competitive sports, like, you're always comparing yourself to people. You're always wanting to know, how good am I, right?
That was John's. That's what he was like. Yeah. You know, hey, I've done it here. Let's see if I can do it
But at the same time, you know, Brad Stevens just stepped away from the Celtics job,
mm-hmm.
right? He's like, I don't want to do this anymore.
Well, once you get there, I'm sure it's just as horrible. You know, things look great when you're down at the but that's another thing, though. Juwan's been to the NBA. Beilein spent his whole career in colleges, right? Like, he, you know, Canisius, like, that's where he came from, right?
Well, but it's clear for one that Juwan Howard isn't going to go anywhere until his kids are through, right?
Yeah.
So that buys you at least 4 years, I think. Maybe three if Jet is moving up the rankings like it looks like he is. Mm-hmm. And I just remember I was watching an interview. I think he was being interviewed by Jalen Rose, actually, and they asked him about NBA coaching, and what he said is, like, that's the past. And I was like, wow, that's a really reassuring answer. And, you know, I'm never going to say never, because Beilein happened, and I never would have believed that in a million years. And I expect at some point that he will have eyes for the NBA, but I think that's going to be in a decade, right?
Yeah.
After, if he's able to recruit at the way it looks like he's going to be able to recruit, you know, yeah. UNC just turned over, Duke just turned over, Kansas is in a bunch of trouble.
Kentucky Kentucky's
going to be Kentucky, right? Like,
you talk about the way he recruits, and Jet's recruiting for Michigan. Like, he's like legit recruiting for Michigan. So I don't think I'm being presumptuous when I say he's going to coach it. Everyone knows he's going to coach his other son. But like, I talked to Jaden Bradley's dad, and he's like, man, look, I'm not telling you that Michigan leads or that he's going to go to Michigan, but I will tell you, Michigan has an unfair advantage with Jet Howard. It's like, Jet Howard is Jaden's guy. They were roommates. He is absolutely recruiting for Michigan. So he's going to coach both sons, and he's going to have a pipeline into, now that he's at Mount Verde, he has an in at IMG. I mean, this thing is, this thing is going to be rolling. So I'm with you. I think it's a decade away, somewhere along those lines. But I do want to get you guys' opinion on these point guards that are coming in. So Jaden Bradley last week, Seth Trimble this week, Dougie McDaniel coming up the following week. Sort of compare and contrast these guys. And if you think, at least your personal pecking order, your personal preference, which for a lot of people isn't in line with the rankings.
No, and mine isn't either. But that's specifically because, like, how many years are you getting out of Jaden Bradley? Mm-hmm. One. How many years are you getting out of Seth Trimble? Probably more than one. And Seth Trimble is 6'3", can jump out of the gym as a legit point guard, and like has some rough edges. But that second year, I want to see that second year. And you're probably not going to get that with Jaden Bradley. So if I had my druthers, it would be Trimble. And, you know, McDaniel is an exciting guy, just a lightning bolt on the court, but he is small. And his outside shot does not compensate for that in a way that it would need to, I think, for me to like prefer him over the other two options. Obviously, you're going to have Frankie around too. So, you know, Frankie is similar to McDaniel in a lot of ways, and maybe you want to have someone a little bit different for matchup purposes and that kind of stuff. So Trimble is the guy that I want. And, you know, if we have to settle for Jaden Bradley, okay.
Yeah, I mean, I'd love someone you could play as an off guard, because you're going to have to replace Eli next year anyway. And you're not sure you're going to have to replace Frankie. In fact, like, I think it's more likely they get a couple years out of him, unless his jump shot is, like, you know, all you know, just as marvelous as the rest of his game. So, like, to have a guy who can just be your off guard and then play a little bit at point, like, that seems to be, like, just a better fit for what they're looking for.
Yeah, I think the thing about Seth, and right now I think Seth is, like, right outside the top 100. The gap between he and Jaden Bradley is not that wide. It is not.
No, and some of the other sites in the industry have already moved him up significantly into their top 50. So I think that's probably going to happen on 24/7 sooner or later.
It absolutely will. I think that the question that I heard one scout asked me, he said, hey, doesn't Michigan already have a combo guard in Zeb Jackson? You shouldn't want to go for it. It's like, this is different. You know, Zeb was always way more two than one, whereas Seth would come in with legit point guard skills. You know, he has a setup game to his game that Zeb just does. Still a work in progress. I'm not saying Zeb can't do it or won't do it. I'm saying at the same stage of development that Seth Trimble is farther along. And I love his bounce. Love his bounce. I think if there is something that I find a little, if there's a piece of Jaden Bradley's game that I find really appealing, is that you're talking about a kid who is, I see him as the consummate floor general. I mean, he's a guy, and talking to his dad, he said, you know, with all the wings that Michigan has, he is a perfect pass first, shoot second point guard that can shoot. The way he put it to me, he said, look, we are not married to this G League idea. We are not determined to be one and done. And the reason why that's important, because you would think that a guy with that mentality is going to come in saying, I got to get mine. You know, I got to get mine so I can get out. And he said, that's just not my son. He said, he'll take as long as it takes. It might take a couple of years, and he's fine with that. So I don't know if that changes your equation.
I mean, Ryan, I hear that they're saying that.
But you just know, apply it.
Well, you know, if he gets projected in the first round after his freshman year, like, he's probably going to go, right? And that seems like a likely occurrence. So, like, if he was more of a Iggy Brazdeikis, if he was ranked in that range, if he was going to be a second round pick, like, that would, I think, mean more to me. I think that even if they are not demanding to be one and done, the likelihood is that they'll get a ranking where it makes sense for them to be. So
it shall be interesting to see how the timeline works out, because I don't get the sense that Jaden is going to be rushed. I do get the sense that Seth is not going to take a long time. And so does that speed Dougie up? Like, if he senses Seth is about to go and he comes in the very next week. So if Seth doesn't commit and right now, but he's probably going to commit to a school sometime by August at least. Does that move the meter for Dougie to the point where, because you got to realize if you're Doug McDaniel, where you are in this pecking order, wouldn't you say? I would realize it.
I mean, they're not going to let, if they think they have a good shot at Trimble and they prefer him to McDaniel, you know, they're not going to let McDaniel jump the line, right? Like, that's just not the way it works. Like, yeah,
you give a right of first refusal.
Right. He knows the score, right? So, like, I think that these things that get talked about in sort of oblique terms publicly, privately, people know what the pecking order is, I think.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess the scenario would be Xavier Simpson and Cassius Winston.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, if Trimble is sitting on the fence for a long time, and then you go say, all right, well, we're going with this guy unless you pop, then that's I think the right comparison.
All right. Well, we shall see. It's really, really heating up on the basketball side of things. Another big weekend. We'll have more on Jaden Bradley, not just today, but tomorrow as well. So be on the lookout for that. But that's going to do it for another edition of the Roundtable, fellas. Appreciate your time as always.
Getting pushed down the list of Seths in Michigan talk and Michigan circles. Like, I know there's plenty of Sams and Bryans out there, but it's not a whole lot of us, and it's been nice being at the top for a while.
Yeah, sorry, Seth, I haven't gotten pushed yet.
When Michigan recruits a guy named Ira.
Yeah, there was an Ira Bowman at 10 when my sister was there, and they called him the rabbi, but none here, so I'm good so far.